Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Conversations with American Heroes at the Watering Hole. Conversations with American Heroes is produced by American Heroes Press in cooperation with High Tech Criminal Justice. Now, here's your host, Lieutenant Foster.
And you are listening to American Heroes Radio. I'm your host, Lieutenant Raymond E. Foster, LAPD retired. This afternoon, it's a conversation with Captain Chris DiGiuseppe of the St. Louis Lake Police Department and Mike Wilkerson, the creators of the podcast What Cops Watch. Here on American Heroes Radio, we have nearly 5,000 friends on Blog Talk, but we can always use more, so go to our show page and make us a friend, and of course, make the show a favorite. Now, that's important. Make the show a favorite and become a follower here on Blog Talk Radio. And then go over to our Facebook fan page and join the over 4,000 people who are fans of American Heroes Radio on Facebook. And of course, on Twitter, we have over 26,000 followers, and that's at @AMER Heroes Radio. That's @AMER Heroes Radio. Thank you for listening. The show's been downloaded over 1.5 million times, and it's certainly the guests and the listeners that have made this show a success. Next Thursday, it's going to be conversations with a Marine Corps general. Major General John Admire, United States Marine Corps, retired, will be stopping by the Watering Hole. I'm your host, Lieutenant Raymond E. Foster, LAPD, retired, and you are listening to the Watering Hole on American Heroes Radio. Your number to join the conversation is 646-378-1513. That's 646-378-1513. We've interviewed several of those who've served in the current war on terror. Here's a clip of Gunnery Sergeant Nicholas A. Popovich, USMC retired, the author of Once a Marine, and a very short piece about the Second Battle of Fallujah.
You know, when I first got hit, you know, my crewmen, they're both wounded too, and they step up, they stay in the fight. They, you know, one guy's managing a machine gun with his arm bleeding, the other one's wounded, he's up there commanding it, the other guy's fresh out of high school, and he's driving, the top of the tank's on fire, you know, and I couldn't see, I was blind, I was deafened, I didn't know what was going on, but these guys, you know, they did that to save my life. And then when I got to the medevac site, you know, these corpsmen, they're risking their lives, they're taking their own body armor off to cover me up, to give me just a slightly better shot of surviving.
To hear the entire interview of Gunnery Sergeant Nick Popovich, author of Once a Marine, go to AmericanHeroesRadio.com, episode number 38. Here at American Heroes Radio, we're also sponsored by Leadership Texas Hold'em Style. Charles Oshbacher, a top 50 reviewer on Amazon.com, posted a review of Leadership Texas Hold'em Style. He said, in part, about the book, "This is, without question, one of the best books on effective leadership ever written. And it is profound and entertaining, as one of the most unusual yet best possible analogies is used." He continued, "Many books on leadership tend to be correct in their content, but dull in their delivery. In this case, the content is superb, and the delivery is even beyond that. The comparisons between poker and quality leadership are apt, educational, and make this book one that should be read, reread, and intellectually digested."
Are you a leader? Challenge yourself. Leadership, Texas Hold'em Style, the leadership book written by leaders for leaders. Challenge yourself. 52 chapters, 52 practical leadership concepts, 52 cards. Leadership, Texas Hold'em Style, vision, direction, determination, honor, action, and change are a few of the 52 leadership concepts. Challenge yourself. Leadership, Texas Hold'em Style, available at www.pokerleadership.com.
For more information on how leadership is like poker, go to www.pokerleadership.com. American Heroes Radio is growing into the American Heroes Radio Network. At our homepage on AmericanHeroesRadio.com, click on the link to find the network and other Blog Talk programs hosted by current and former military, police, and fire service personnel.
Hi, this is Mojo. Along with being the host of Talk Radio Portal on Blog Talk Radio, I'm a retired veteran of the Air National Guard with 26 years of honorable service. And now, I am a member of the American Heroes Radio Network. Along with Lieutenant Raymond E. Foster, LAPD retired, we'd like to invite those who share the same interests as us by providing you an avenue in which to share your stories either as a guest or a host on the American Heroes Radio Network. For scheduling to be a guest or details on how to become a host, email your inquiries to Lieutenant Foster, founder of the American Heroes Network, at editor@police-writers.com. The camaraderie you enjoyed in the military or as a police officer or a fireman does not have to stop when you retire or change careers. You can unconditionally keep it alive by being a guest or a host on the American Heroes Radio Network.
The chat room is open and we'll take calls later in the show, so if you'd like to join the dialogue or ask Chris or Mike a question, the number is 646-378-1513. That's 646-378-1513. What Cops Watch is a podcast that provides reviews and law enforcement and a law enforcement perspective on popular film and television. Chris DiGiuseppe is an award-winning and local best-selling author from his first novel, The Lightbringer, and has been traditionally published 5 times. Chris has over 20 years' experience in law enforcement at various levels, up to and including assistant chief of police. He's a graduate of the FBI National Academy and Northwestern University School of Police Command Staff. He is trained in various aspects of law enforcement and holds degrees in human resources and business administration. Chris lives with his wife and children in Missouri. Mike Wilkinson has been creating podcast content for over a decade. In that time, he has provided the capture, edit, and promotion for all manner of skill sets, perspectives, and more that inform, educate, and create legacies. After creating one of the most prolific podcasts networks online, Mike continues to look for people with unique perspectives to share their stories with audiences that number more than 4 million annually. Mike is originally from the Great White North of Wisconsin, but now resides in St. Louis, Missouri, where he and his family enjoy Cardinal baseball, toasted ravioli, and all things cinematic. And Mike, I thought you said you weren't Italian.
I only eat Italian. You can judge that from my waistline, clearly. Thanks for having us.
So
it's great to be here.
You're welcome. You're welcome, and thank you for being here. Chris, so you've been here. This is like your third time. Are you not busy enough?
Yes, sir, but never too busy to be on the show. We appreciate it.
So just give us a little update. How's the books? Is it still – you got a good back shelf there? You still pumping that book out?
Yeah, we are. We myself and my co-author, Mike Force, just finished the third book in the Lightbringer trilogy. And I also had another book entitled Blue Line that came out, a kind of a political thriller that came out back in April. And, yeah, it's been going well. The, you know, once you get it written and edited, as you know, the marketing is the real killer. That's where all the work comes into play. But it's been going well. We're still moving it forward and still have the contacts out in L.A. that we're talking with on trying to make the Lightbringer series into a TV show.
So what is the genesis for the idea of What Cops Watch?
Well, you know, Mike approached me. Mike's been in podcasting for a long time and a media generator, and he approached me and said, hey, would you be interested in doing a podcast to talk about what police officers are interested in, you know, watching on TV or at movies and such. You know, one of my goals that I have before I get out of law enforcement is to educate the public, trying to take people behind the badge and to let them know it's kind of within everything I do, you know, the writing and such, but to let them know that, you know, we're like everybody else. We're people too. There's a human side to the badge, and on the other, on the flip side, to let cops know, you know what, it's okay to be human. It's okay to be like everybody else. I've been doing this for 23 years, and there's a lot of times that I've come across incidents where the public has this perception that, hey, we're not like everybody else. We're not, you know, you go through some training and you change and you're hardened and so on and so forth. And really trying to undo that, especially in the wake of, you know, what's been going on over the last 10 months or so.
Mike, have you worked with law enforcement personnel before on a project?
I have. Something that Chris left out that I've always loved bringing podcasting into is the realm of what actually happens inside of entertainment. And that doesn't just cross into television like what mostly Chris and I have looked at so far, but also into feature films. A lot of people are under the impression that whatever you see on screen is exactly how it goes. This even goes for movies where they go and they hire consultants that are law enforcement consultants, when in reality, they'll use them as a guide, but very often, especially inside of existing current television, like a number of series that we talked about, you just don't get what the process of how it actually works. I always understand that there is a disbelief pill that has to be taken inside of both television and movies, but when it comes to law enforcement, especially when movies and television series now live on forever, it's never been more important to provide something that is not something ridiculous and outrageous about law enforcement.
Well, especially on television where they have 42 minutes to solve the crime, the time compression is one of the things that I think people don't realize that DNA doesn't come back in 30 seconds. It comes back in several weeks.
Right, right. Something else, we did a perspective review of a fantastic movie called Mystic River. And inside of that movie, thankfully, it spans across an almost lifetime of three men. We're able to stretch some of that, and it works really well. But you're absolutely right. You can talk to just about anybody on the street nowadays, and they'll say, well, can't they just run DNA on them? Like, DNA is whipping out a driver's license at this point, when in all actuality, it is not.
So what kind of films are you looking at right now? Are you just kind of picking and choosing, or is it indeed, you know, what have you watched recently, Chris? Is that how the conversation goes?
Well, it's, you know, I guess the reality of it is that police officers, just like everybody else, watch a variety of TV shows and movies. Recently, we did go into several TV shows such as Blue Bloods and CSI. And such. We've done some perspective reviews, like Mike mentioned, of Mystic River, and we also did a review of The Negotiator. And, you know, like Mike was saying, interestingly enough, you know, we get into a lot of these things, and we try to separate the reality from the fiction and give clarification. But then again, on the flip side of it too is what do people want to see? You know, is it more entertaining not to have, you know, the realistic thing in there? And it just depends.
Well, now are you focusing on looking at the technical aspects and what they got wrong, or are you delving a little bit deeper into, you know, how let's go back to Mystic River, how that as a human being impacted you?
Yeah, there's an aspect also I think Chris didn't kind of include, and the real aspect is that we're taking in suggestions from cops about programs that they watch. And the want there is for people to understand that, again, there's a human face and person inside of everybody that's behind the badge. So while we're definitely digging in hard inside of these very first What Cops Watch episodes for the first nine, the fact of the matter is that we've gotten many suggestions from cops themselves that are Dancing with the Stars, you know, stuff that's outside the realm of not just focusing on cop-based stuff, because this is kind of the ding-ding light bulb moment for me, Mike Wilkerson. When we got done with the very first Mystic River perspective review, Chris said something very poignant to me, and it has really stuck with me since then. And it's that Chris, in general, as many police officers have admitted, doesn't go to stuff that is crime and cop and death and kids being abducted base. for entertainment. And the reason is because get plenty of that inside of their everyday job. And
yeah, I was going to say, I don't watch cop shows.
Right. That's a revelation that hit me again. That was in our first review, and it stuck with me. There's no doubt about that. The one is you mentioned, do we only just stick to the nitpicking and that's not how that happens. It's never so much as that's not how that happens and that's not reality. A really great sample I would use is from a terrible show called The Following, which, by the way, was just canceled by Fox. It's inside of their first season, towards the end of that season, they're looking for a truck full of murderers.
Yeah.
And so they have two Massachusetts State Police officers that casually walk to the front door of a domicile where, you know, maybe these killers are inside there. Well, that would never happen. You would never have both officers casually walking up to a door where killers might be. It doesn't work that way. And that it's portrayed that way, and they literally show anybody with an acronym either on their vest or jacket or on a badge, literally, as an idiot inside of every opportunity is totally disingenuous to you, to Chris, and everybody that's ever served in any capacity, frankly.
Yeah, and as your question was, do you go deeper than the technical aspects? We do have a portion of the podcast where we go into the good and the bad and you know, what's realistic, but it does go deeper than that. Just like Mike said,
oh, yeah.
You know, Mystic River starts out with this abduction scene and this scene where this kid was traumatized and taken away and possibly molested and such. And it's like I said to Mike, you know, when I get into a movie or a show and they do something to a kid, it turns me off. I'm probably not going any further. I've seen too much of it, read too many police reports, seen too many actual cases on it, where if I'm going to go to something for entertainment, it's going to be more fictional or it's going to be something completely out of that realm. And that's kind of what we're looking for from other police officers,
mm-hmm.
that opinion,
yeah.
that perspective, and you know, kind of the reasons behind it.
And you're listening to American Heroes Radio. We're with our guests, Chris DiGiuseppe and Mike Wilkerson, the creators of What Cops Watch. Your number to join the conversation is 646-378-1513. That's 646-378-1513. You know, and for me, I tend to watch comedies I'm probably a House fanatic is the only thing that I watched religiously. But again, with House, and thinking about this, I know there's all of the fiction involved in it, but I don't know enough about medicine to be critiquing it as I go along. And my father was a policeman, and my wife was a policeman, and we used to play a game as we'd watch these shows, and the game was how many reports and how many DR numbers. That's how many numbers you'd get for every crime or every victim. And we'd count the paperwork you'd have to do for one chase scene. And that was our entertainment version of it. But we kind of shy away from that because, as you said, just get too much of it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, the neat aspects that we also bring to the program are a lot of entertainment nowadays, especially Blu-ray and DVD features, provide you with what is essentially commentary from the people that either make the program or movie or the actors that participate in it. They give you some really great behind-the-scenes stuff. I myself am a commentary whore. I eat that stuff up like with a biscuit. And being able to convey some of those details that are shared inside of that stuff to people that listen and know the titles that we talk about, that's also an additional piece that adds into a storytelling experience that makes our program unlike any other.
It is so interesting that you're telling stories about stories, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's something that has just wrapped me in the podcasting blanket that it allows me in to know that my family, in particular my now 12-year-old daughter in 3 days, is going to have a legacy of over a decade and whenever I finish podcasting to go back and listen to what I thought or the stories about the – Chris and I talk, especially inside of Mystic River, having family from just outside that area, I've got all kinds of stories that breathe life into the Boston area. And so being able to have that little dance, being able to have the memories and the stories that I remember that are shared inside the podcast that give people concepts and ideas about me that bleed into the storytelling, that's fun. And it provides me with a chance to leave a legacy, which is why I podcast.
And since I've been doing this short period of time, it's really caused me to take a look, watch more movies, watch more TV shows, and take an analytical look at some of these things. Whereas I'm like you, I don't want to go watch a cop show, but I've been doing more of it since Mike and I have been putting on whatcopswatch.com, and it's I've discovered some fascinating things. So
yeah, another really great sample is we recently did the review of the first episode of the Netflix series Marvel's Daredevil. And the neat part about that is that it's actually set inside of Hell's Kitchen. And the funny part about Hell's Kitchen is that while they paint it as kind of a toilet with criminals and heroes beating them up, the fact is that Hell's Kitchen currently is actually a really nice area.
Yeah.
And so being able to talk about that aspect, that a lot of people would never guess that from the series. You'd never guess that, you know, it looks like any serene park that you walk through in just about any metropolitan city currently. Not a lot of people know that, and it's something that we would bring through and do inside of that review. It's extraordinary.
The two main characters in that are, their front is that they are defense attorneys, and one of the first questions Mike had was, hey, as a cop, is that going to turn you off right off the bat? And it didn't, but, you know, I told them, you know, it just depends on what direction this goes, so... It was interesting.
Those little backstories that Chris is referring to there are also awesome, because as the casual viewer and knower of, hey, that guy's a cop, oh yeah, you never think, like, I wonder if that guy likes defense attorneys or not. And the little repartee that we have about things like that, I think, is what I know I'm getting out of a really great piece of fun in regard to making whatcopswatch.com. It's just a ton of fun.
You know, in the 80s and 90s, I worked at a lot of movies, and here they film a lot in Los Angeles, and they hire policemen, at that time, lots of policemen. Occasionally, I did everything from being Batman's bodyguard. When Michael Keaton was Batman, I was actually his bodyguard, assigned to walk with him to and from the set.
Awesome.
I mean, I was Batman. I was Batman's bodyguard, man. I'm a tough son of a bitch. And but also they would ask you technical questions constantly, but what you found out was that,
right.
And I'll give you an example, was about handcuffing, and I said, no, we'd handcuff behind the back, and, well, this is a famous actor, and he's like, well, I'm not getting handcuffed behind the back, and for his ego and for the shot, they did it the other way. And so when I watch these things, I often think to myself, how much of what they're showing me is not police procedure but storytelling, or done
right.
for the benefit of advancing the story itself. And so I try to separate that out, because I think if you sit and watched anything police-related and you critiqued it, you just wouldn't watch anything, because it's not done right most of the time.
I agree.
No, that's really accurate. To go back to our perspective review of The Negotiator, something that Chris left out about that is that not only did we have Chris and I talking about that, both from the perspective of what kind of movie is it, and then whether what happens in there is real. We actually had a real-life crisis negotiator inside of that, as well as, Ray, I don't know if you know, but that story is actually on an that happened here in St. Louis. Did you know that?
I did, but mostly from reviewing your page.
Oh, sure. Well, that's the neat part, is that not only did it happen here in St. Louis, not only do we have a real crisis negotiator, not only do we have Chris, who's been in law enforcement for 25 years, to look at it perspective-wise, not only do we have me generating a always unique opinion about what you're watching, but we actually have the guy that the story is based on inside of our podcast. That's how I create the layers inside of podcastdom, that you go to twoguystalking.com and whatcopswatch.com, you get something completely different than you're going to get anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, we both found the movie entertaining. The funny thing was is that the real person who actually took the hostages, he was a St. Louis City police officer. it wasn't as accurate, or wasn't nearly accurate,
no.
per what he had to say. So he didn't like the film, but you know, but to each his own. That's how it went.
Well, you know, another layer of this, and I have your like the 265th broadcast or something like that. And my podcasts are always police, fire, military, generally telling their story, you know, everything from World War II guys all the way up to the present. And I find more often than not I'll get an email where the podcast has been included as coursework at a university because of somebody's unique perspective. Do you feel
exactly.
that's one of the things I feel like I do is I add to history. I'm recording people's
yeah.
own stories as they tell them.
Yeah.
And so I know it adds this layer and depth to society. Do you feel like you also have this educational portion that's going on with your program?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that at all. It's one of the pieces that I use with twoguystalking.com as a business is to everybody always kind of tilts their head sideways when you say the word podcast, and they'll say, what? And I'll say a podcast. It's captured perspective. So not so strangely, it's exactly what you're saying there, Ray, is everybody has a skill set. Everybody's got a story to tell. Everybody's got a perspective. I just specialize in capturing it and layering it in entertainment and building upon the audience that I've been generating for a decade.
Well, and you know what's unique? Talk about podcasting, and again, I've been doing it 6 years now, so I'm a little right behind you. But I have an app on my phone right now that goes up and looks at my Facebook page and then selects podcasts for me to listen to based on the
right.
content there as I walk or I exercise. And it's fantastic. It's right on. I have never had – here's your next suggested thing to listen to. I have not had a bad – because the podcast, it's so varied and there's so much depth to this simple medium that is, I think, is fabulous.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Podcasting really does allow – it's kind of the double-edged sword that everybody will talk about inside of entertainment – where anybody can podcast. That's the good part. The bad part is anybody can podcast. And so are you going to have a plan? A really great sample, Ray, is I would imagine if we were sitting next to you, you probably have at least an outline of some sort that you're using to propel your program. We do something similar inside of Two Guys Talking Circles in that we use something called a skeleton. And then we put the meat on the skeleton as we either go inside the show or as we think up other things, we add those to the skeleton and use the skeleton to propel the show. What I traditionally have made sure that podcasting is not radio 2.0. It's the days of a couple of guys sitting in front of a microphone and yucking it up to have another radio show, except it's their own and it's on the internet. That's not what I consider podcasting. And it's difficult to watch radio try and paint that picture when I don't want them to.
And I would agree with you. I think that, and that's not when we go with this. I'd at least try not to. But you're absolutely right.
Right.
The fun thing about podcasting, too, for me is, just as you said, there's a whole workup for content beforehand. There is an outline. I call it the show notes, exactly how it's going to go. I've got a timer going. I've got all this technology and a board to run. And so I'm very busy, but yet try to stay engaged into a conversation. And it's very challenging, and I like it. So,
plus,
frankly, it sold my books. I mean, that's the best
yeah.
part.
Right. Yeah. Well, the best part is that you get to take any skill set and story set that you have. If you ask any business owner, you've got stories to tell people, right? They'll say yes, obviously. You've got skill sets that you'd like to share with people, right? Oh yes, there's no doubt about that. And so, how are you sharing those things on your website currently? Well, I'm not. Okay, well, let's fix that with a podcast. And that is the business model that I've used to build things like WhatCopsWatch.com, where I go and get the people that do the things in real life and then get to talk about them semi-casually that entertains and educates other people about topics. That is, I've just given you the definition of what I've been doing for a decade.
Well, now, here's the – and with this program, it often goes in directions that I don't – anticipate, and that's the one that mm-hmm. probably is the most enjoyable. But also, and I think it's the subject matter too, at times you can hear that it gets very emotional because I don't know if it's because the guests think they're just talking to a friend on the telephone, mm-hmm. but if you listen, and it's usually about at the 35 or 40 minute mark where we've now got comfortable with each other, and then some very serious moment will come up and then we'll talk about it. And it really gives them the ability to express themselves in a almost safe public environment.
Yeah, being able to capture, again, to go back to definition of podcast, the podcast that I always will lean towards and come back to are the ones where it sounds like we've tuned into a very, you said it almost exactly, Ray, is it's a casual conversation where people are providing storytelling opportunities and you happen to be listening to them. Taking out the formal, I must now tune in part, And much of the formality inside of radio programs, I think, really does help what is podcasting. You talked about a clock, too. Something inside of Two Guys Talking that we've avoided completely since our very first run is the radio clock. It's something that I've attracted a lot of business customers with, in that I don't have to do a storytelling segment inside of 8 minutes, and then we got to go to break for 3.5 while you can be bored waiting. You don't have any of that inside of the podcast realm, especially inside of whatcopswatch.com or Two Guys Talking Anything. And it's because the story propels the cadence, the pace of what the podcast is.
Well, Mike, you to just end those comments, we actually hit what I call the mid-show break. And quite frankly,
sure,
it's more for me to go to the little boys' room. So
sure,
you're listening to American Heroes Radio at the Watering Hole. We are at that mid-show break. Our guests are Chris DiGiuseppe and Mike Wilkerson, the founders of What Cops Watch. Hey, everybody, grab a cup. We'll be right back.
www.police-writers.com, www.military-writers.com, www.firefighter-writers.com. Between the three websites, more than 2,000 American heroes and their over 5,000 books are listed. Visit the sites or go to www.americanheroespress.com. For information on advertising on the radio show or any of our websites, send an email to sales@police-writers.com. The music used during the show is provided through a license and is the artist Chris Jurgensen and from his album Big Bad Son. For more information about the artist Chris Jurgensen and his music, visit www.police-writers.com. Stay informed by subscribing to the American Heroes newsletter. This monthly newsletter includes articles written by and for military personnel, law enforcement officials, firefighters, and other emergency services personnel. If you would like to be a guest, send an email to editor@police-writers.com. Stay right here. Your host, Lieutenant Foster, will be right back.
Put your hands on my Bible and swear to tell me the truth. Let me ask a question of you. Put your hands on my Bible and swear to tell me the truth. Let me ask a question of you. I just want to know if you love me, baby, the same way that I love you.
You are listening to American Heroes Radio. Conversations at the Watering Hole with your host, Lieutenant Raymond E. Foster, LAPD, retired. And now, back to the show.
Hey, this is the Watering Hole, and our guests are Chris D. Giuseppe and Mike Wilkerson, the creators of What Cops Watch. Here at American Heroes Radio, though, we have interviewed many service members. One of those was Cy Brenner, the author of The Night I Got Killed.
We were, as I said, we were being shelled mercilessly, and we were in a very wooded area in the mountains. And when we got out of that area, I was with another soldier who I didn't know, and he said to me, "Let's get into the shadows of that farmhouse so they won't see us," because there were 6 Tiger tanks there shelling us with their 88s on the tanks. And as we ran toward the farmhouse, I looked over my shoulder and saw a flash, and that's all I remembered. I was later told that the farmhouse blew up and that both of our bodies went flying into the air, and so our friends thought we were killed. But actually, when I regained consciousness, the soldier next to me, whose name I never did find out, rolled over and he said to me, "I broke your dog tags in half so they wouldn't know that you were Jewish. I told them that you had the wrong blood type on it." And there was a German standing over me with an American 45 on my nose, and another one was kicking me in the ribs, yelling, "Raus, raus, get up, get up." And another one had a hand grenade, and I thought, "My God, if he throws a grenade, he'll kill us all."
Hear the entire interview. Cy Brenner, the author of The Night I Got Killed. Go to AmericanHeroesRadio.com, episode number 178. So, Chris and Mike, if you'd like to join the conversation, the creators of What Cops Watch, the number is 646-378-1513. That's 646-378-1513. You know, the one thing that I like is a good story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no question about that. What drives me inside of television, especially as a professional entertainment critic, asterisk, is when I can watch 43 minutes of a television show and I'm totally satiated. I look at other programs that can't do that, like in 3 hours. It also makes movies that much more frustrating. When you can watch a really great episode of a television show and be completely satiated in 43 minutes, but a movie at 97 minutes can't get anything right, there's something wrong. And that's kind of the platform I use inside of Two Guys Talking in general, too, is to tell people to be discerning about what they're watching. The time and effort that you take to watch anything is as easily as valuable as anything you pull out of your wallet and give to somebody.
One of the things you mentioned earlier, it piqued my interest, because a very good friend of mine who's a retired police captain and the co-author on our leadership book, he and I both are Dancing with Stars fanatics. And I'm not afraid to say that. This year, we had a Valentine's Day dance at the lodge, and I challenged the members that I would learn the tango. And so in 3 months, my wife and I learned the tango, and I can't watch them do that. And I got to tell you that, you know, there's so much storytelling going on with that and so much genius behind the production and everything that's going on. I think that that's just a fabulous program, and it's nothing cop-like at all.
Well, right, then isn't that the gist, Ray, is that, you know, cops are made up of way more than a duty uniform, a badge, a gun, and a baton, and taser, and whatever else that is now attached to cops. You're way more than that, and being able to go, again, as Chris has always said, behind the badge, to see the human face of those serving behind the badge is exactly what CopsWatch.com is for.
And that's been a big trend of us getting to the truth and having cops. And as you know, Ray, the culture, you know, our police culture, it's tough to get cops to open up sometimes, isn't it? I mean, you know, we're in a closed culture, but once they feel comfortable and they start talking, you start realizing, hey, they're just like everybody else. We get cops that, you know, that go for the science fiction movies or the the new Marvel movies that are out there. And because I think sometimes maybe the public has a perception that, you know, we sit around and watch cop shows all the time.
Well, it's so funny because I'm thinking back now. I mean, I rode 8 hours in the graveyard shift with probably 75 or 80 different people. And the conversations that we would have in, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning till about 5 o'clock in the morning when there was very little going on were always fascinating. And the person next to me, one could have a law degree and the next one could be a high school dropout, quite frankly. But yes, you're right. The breadth and depth of people who go into law enforcement is actually quite incredible.
Right. It's very diverse and just all kinds of backgrounds and all kinds of different stories they bring to the table before they ever pin the badge on. So, you know, coming through that and going through some of the things that we experience on the job, you know, like I said, sometimes the public, I think, has a perception of, hey, once you get through that academy, once you pin that badge on, you're changed. You're not sometimes you're not a person anymore, or you're not what you used to be. And sometimes it does change you. But going back to entertainment and that, we found that through this format, it allows cops to open up and, you know, kind of be who they are.
And talking about opening up, the Dancing with Stars conversation, my friend Andrew and I are both space travel fanatics. We just love the Apollo from the Gemini through the – or from Mercury through Gemini. I mean, we just know everything. And Buzz Aldrin was on, and I was watching, and I said – I remember having lunch with Andrew and going, hey, so, you know Buzz Aldrin, you know, we had a second man on the moon. I go, yeah, well, you know, he's on Dancing with the Stars. He goes, oh, I know, I've been watching. And that's how it comes out that here's something I don't know if I really want to disclose, but here's a way to get it into the conversation because it's Buzz Aldrin.
Right, exactly.
Sure, there's a little storytelling pieces like that you mentioned human spaceflight in general. I, too, am a human spaceflight junkie. I was born in 1970, so I missed the awesomeness of the crescendo of the Apollo program and, you know, everything inside of Gemini and Mercury. But going back and listening to the achievement of what was human spaceflight in the, you know, in that super cone that you experienced, I love that. Going back to From the Earth to the Moon on HBO as a series to go back and perspective review now more than 20 years later after that's come out, I can't wait to do that because of, you know, all of the achievement that was and the planning and the problem solving and the rallying together of skill sets, it was a giant macrocosm of being able to collect so many different people inside of podcasting. And thankfully, there are still so many people left from the Apollo program that I'd love to get anybody out of any staffs inside of any of those programs involved in a perspective review of that. Can you imagine going back and reviewing From the Earth to the Moon with any of the people that led projects or the people that were pushing buttons on those old school terminals? Man, that would rock.
Yeah, it would be absolutely awesome. You know, one of the things we talked briefly, and we're actually going back into that, the educational aspect of this. I did, one of the books I put out was YouTube for the Criminal Justice Educator, and I reviewed 500 YouTube videos for use in the classroom. And one of the things that I like to use in the classroom is movie and television, but I do guides with them. I'll sit down and do guides for students to point out things that I don't think they realize they're seeing. In other words,
yes,
a filmmaker can't sometimes, they can't show you, they've got to tell you, or they can't tell you, they've got to show you a story. And sometimes they're doing things that are metaphor for what's really going on. Do you guys go into that?
No, we do. In fact, again, to go back to Mystic River, there's a lot of that going on. I don't know if you know this, Ray, but that movie was directed by Clint Eastwood. And Clint Eastwood has a lot of really great directing habits that, again, I think a lot of people don't know anything about. The fact that there never is the screaming of action. Actors being on set and being comfortable and being able to slip into a role is something that every actor that's ever worked with Clint Eastwood has talked about as an experience that they'll never forget and they'll always want to repeat, because it is not that harried turn-off, turn-on thing. It's way more of an experience as an actor or someone conveying a portrayal of something or somebody. And that's magic. That's the magic portion of director studies.
That's where the educational portion came in for me when, you know, Mike reviews all the... Eastwood does one take. apparently, when he gets ready to shoot, which I guess is unheard of in the movie industry. And a lot of times something goes wrong, he leaves it in there, and it comes out phenomenal.
Yeah, one of the best perspectives of that is inside the scene, you've got Tim Robbins, who's on the deck, and he goes to light a cigarette. And intentionally, he had taken three matches because he wanted to make sure that the cigarette would light. And behind him, he's not startled by Sean Penn's character as he turns around. He's not startled by him. He's actually startled by when he strikes the matches, well, all three of the matches essentially blow up in his hand. And in traditional movie making, especially across every set nowadays, you would stop, everybody would revert back to where they were, and they'd recut the scene. Well, that's not how Clint Eastwood operates inside of his movie making. And that makes it extraordinarily interesting for the actors to work in that environment, but also for the people that make all of the movies that Clint Eastwood makes, because everybody that works with Clint Eastwood have been making movies with Clint Eastwood forever. And so you've got that chemistry of the people that work with Clint Eastwood, and then all of that chemistry spilling onto people that are actors for Clint Eastwood. And that's why you get movies that are very special, like Mystic River.
And that truly is a blend of putting reality into fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And and you bring something, you have a bridge here to law enforcement that you've probably seen, but quite frankly, and I was the best cop you're ever going to meet when it comes to being on the street, and I'll get emails from people, some will agree and some will disagree, but the thing about it was, to me, it was always an acting career. It was always acting, and there were times where you had to just pause and get back into character. Because right. That's what was required for that scene. Because this isn't, I'm not here to solve your family dispute, or I don't know anything about all this violence and these dead bodies and this shooting, but I have to play a part that takes control of this and that does certain things. And you right. talked about the child abduction turning you off. Quite frankly, it turns me off only because it seems to me to be a simple trick to get my sympathy when I'm watching something, number one.
True.
And number two is, boy, your acting skills come out when you're interviewing that child molester, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's for me, it's too. It's where do you go for entertainment? If you're seeing this all day, you're going, is that where you're going to gravitate toward? And obviously, with the conversation that we just had, hey, Dancing with the Stars, it's entertaining. I'm going to go there. That's where you're going to put your time in. So, and that's kind of the discovery that we found as we go around and we talk to police officers. I went around the station just to ask people, well, what do you watch? Well, it's just a variety of different things. And, if they really open up, it's a lot of it's surprising. It's, like I said, hard to get cops to open up sometimes. But, when you go to the realm of entertainment, it really opens up some new discoveries.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm such a Big Bang geek, I named my cat Sheldon Cooper.
I like that show also. I got to agree.
To go back to your comment in regard to acting, Chris and I were just in the prelude to your program today, we were talking about Rush and Giddy Lee and Neil Peart and the wonder that is Rush the band, and the reason that we mention them, all the world is indeed a stage and we are merely players, is some lyrics from one of their songs, and it's totally true. Whether you're doing a podcast, whether you're a cop on scene trying to collect the information, we are all players, and the world's a stage, and you get to choose. And hopefully let people see what you want them to see and as you are a player.
Well, that's where I think Lieutenant was going there with the job. You're truly it's an act. And at times you're exhausted, at the end of the day. It's just because you've been on stage all day just trying to remedy these things, some things that are just impossible
mm-hmm.
to remedy or to solve. But you better be creative and pull something out of your bag of tricks to try to make this better. And, it's so I think it kind of naturally fits the profession to entertainment.
Well, and I got to tell you that I think, in my personal opinion, part of the difficulty in law enforcement personnel with their personal relationships is that you spend 8 to 10 to 12 hours a day acting, and then when you get home, there's a part that they want you to play. It's called husband or it's called father. And so there's, and you're exhausted. You're drained. You've spent 8 to 12 hours already being something that you're not. And not that you're not a father naturally, but we all know that those are parts that you play. And shifting into a new role sometimes in that exhausted state, I think that that's where cops go wrong.
I absolutely agree. I don't know if you've ever read the book by Kevin Gil Martin called Emotional Survival in Law Enforcement, but he was a veteran police officer, and I think he became a psychiatrist or psychologist, and he goes into hypervigilance and the things that police officers go through, and you know, and the drawbacks that we have, you know, the high divorce rate, we've high suicide rate and things like that, and a lot of the things that plague us. And he's just dead on how we get there. When you get home at the end of the shift, or you're on your days off and the wife wants to go out and you go out with the neighbors, you know, you're a zombie. You just don't want to talk. You don't want to, you know, you get down. And it is a real struggle. And I really feel bad for, you know, the people in our profession. And I want to get them through that. I don't want them to suffer.
And, you know, one of the things that I learned to do, and I actually learned this working on a Hollywood set, talking to Michael J. Fox, as he was getting ready. He did that movie where they did the bowling, and I can't remember the name of the damn movie. And
which
I
was
talked
it?
To him for, they did, there was a bunch of bowling in it, and he was with, I can't think of it now. I'll think of it after the show. At any rate, in a conversation with him about, you know, he's tried to stay in this character and how he'd work himself up on the way out, on the way to the set to be in the character. And then on the way home, he would spend that time thinking about what he did and work himself out. And I started to call that briefing and debriefing. And on the way to work, I would brief on what I was going to do. And on the way home, I would debrief. And I was just mentally in my head, but that sure seemed to help with the transitions from, you know, one scene to the next, if you will.
Right, exactly.
I think that's one of the many things that's brought up inside of the commentaries, inside of just about anything that nowadays comes out on, especially Blu-ray, that I love to share with the listeners because they probably won't take the time to listen to it. But the actors, or in particular the people that actually create the programming, they always have the most interesting little colloquialisms, very much like what you just shared about, you know, in the vehicle on the way to insert task, you can, and then insert solution or thing that you may not have tried. Being able to do those things and even having the concept of maybe doing them, that's fun. That's educational, and it allows people to find an outlet via the podcast that we have, which is what it's not so much working with cops. It's working to find a solution to give cops an outlet to enjoy something truly. That's why I know I'm participating inside of WhatCopsWatch.com. That and to help people pronounce the word Di Giuseppe.
Yeah, which is difficult.
Hey, so I get it. Di Giuseppe. I can, if I hear it, I can say it. So now let's flip it around. Are you getting feedback on non-law enforcement personnel hearing this and them also being enlightened that, you know, hey, cops aren't all jackbooted thugs?
Yes, and make no bones about it. The vast majority of the front end of our library inside of WhatCopsWatch.com is cops television-based stuff. Mystic River, the perspective review of Negotiator, the perspective review of Daredevil, the entire series from Netflix, Blue Blood, CSI, NCIS, the best top 10 police vehicles in TV and movie history, a variety of things like that. Those are all based to cater to an audience that I've built over a decade to get them their feet wet and drenched and bathed inside of WhatCopsWatch.com, because for that audience, they are looking for something that is cop-based. But bringing out the nuances of what's coming up inside the library, again, why we're on your program, is, again, who would have figured that Dancing with the Stars is going to be on the list of cops, of what cops are watching? I find that extraordinary and something that's going to be definitively outside the box. So, yes, the download numbers are excellent for this program.
Well, we have about a minute and a half. What haven't we talked about?
There's a lot of what goes on inside of a cop's life that I've become privy to just casually talking with Chris, but also talking with police officers that either Chris has turned me on to or some of the other people that have come on to do and be the people that come in and provide perspective about whatever happens inside of law enforcement. And the educational process for me as a host and podcaster is so valuable to me because it allows me to get it's almost like osmosis of what really goes on with cops, especially behind the badge, that I know a lot of people don't get. And that's what I hope that what CopsWatch.com episodes of any kind will provide to everybody that listens to it.
Yeah, I think that it plays into, you know, for me, it's a platform that plays into kind of as an icebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about movies and TV and such. And like we said in the beginning, it's hard to get the police culture to talk. I mean, even about, you know, things that we probably should talk about, you know, things that bother us and so forth. But, you know, it's kind of a platform, I think, an icebreaker to where we can open up. I think it's healthy. I think it's healthy for our profession. So that's the direction we're going.
Very true.
Maybe we need to have movie night after roll call sometime then. How's that sound?
Absolutely.
I would love that. In fact, you talked about Dancing with the Stars. We may just have you on as a co-host for that.
Absolutely.
That'd be fabulous. I'd love that. My wife hooked me. I love that program. Hey, guys, we've killed another perfectly good hour. I appreciate you being on the program.
Thank you for having us, Ray. It's been tremendous.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Take care, gentlemen. And you've been listening to Mike DiGiuseppe, there we go again, and Mike Wilkinson of Chris DiGiuseppe and Mike Wilkinson of What Cops Watch, the founders of that podcast. And you are listening to American Heroes Radio at the Watering Hole. Hey, coming up next week, it's going to be conversations with a Marine Corps general. That's Major General John Admire, United States Marine Corps, retired. What a fascinating career, and it spanned all the way from the early days of the Vietnam War to the current war on terror. So he's got quite a historical perspective and also just a great storyteller when you talk to him. Conversation with American Heroes at the Watering Hole is produced by American Heroes Press in cooperation with High Tech Criminal Justice and sponsored by Leadership Texas Hold'em Style and American Heroes Press. For more information on Leadership is Like Poker, go to PokerLeadership.com. American Heroes Press consists of three websites, www.police-writers.com, a website that lists and catalogs books written by over 1,200 police officers from more than 500 police departments and over 2,400 books written by those American heroes. www.military-writers.com lists 1,200 served, 1,400 service members now, or almost 15, and well over 4,500 books or so written by those American heroes. And of course, rounding it out is www.firefighter-writers.com, which lists books written by firefighters and other EMS personnel. For information on advertising on the radio show or any of our websites, send an email to sales@police-writers.com. The music used during the show is provided through a license and is the artist Chris Jurgensen and from his album Big Bad Son. For more information about that artist, Chris Jurgensen, and his music, visit us at www.police-writers.com. Hey, if you'd like to be a guest, send me an email, editor@police-writers.com. I'm your host, Lieutenant Raymond E. Foster, LAPD, retired. Good night and good hunting.
Control 11 and 6, 1022, it's code 4. the garbage truck around this back and route. Please just find it.
Big bad
sir. Item 18 tonight.
Hey. Rotor 6 tonight, route 2.
Ain't got nobody.
Call 1, control 1. Rotor 3 coming.
Call you.
Ain't got nobody, no.
3-5 at 300 with the Vista, number B-Boy, Coffin Wells, and Halbin.
The moon and the
second
stars in the heavens above.
27 years. RP was uncooperative. Advice was occurring in an apartment. She was calling from apartment A, Adam. It was occurring in B-Boy. She's been disconnected at 300 Linda Vista, number B-Boy.
1-4-1, copy that.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.